You are Locked On Sooners, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma Sooners. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey there, Sooners Nation, and welcome to the Friday edition of the Locked On Sooners podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is John Williams. You can follow me on Twitter at John9Williams. And joining me today, as he does every day, is former Oklahoma Sooners offensive lineman David Walker. You can follow David on Twitter at D_Walk74. You can also check him out on the Iron Horse podcast with former NFL cornerback Brandon Carr. David, how's it going, man?
It's going well, man. It's a Friday. We got Bedlam coming up. And not only do we have Bedlam coming up tomorrow, but man, we got two Bedlam matchups in like a 48-hour window. So back-to-back games of Bedlam basketball. And we also have Locked On Sooner Madness heating up a round two matchup. So I'm excited to talk about that later today as well.
Yeah, so we'll talk about the second round matchups for Locked On Sooners, Sooner Magic, or Madness. It is Sooner Magic too, I guess. Yeah, I mean, if you win the bracket, I mean, Ryan Broyles right now is experiencing some Sooner Magic. So big shout out to Mr. Broyles. And yeah, and then we'll also talk about ESPN had their top 60 quarterbacks ranked for the millennium since the year 2000. Some big surprises, I think, on the list. And we'll talk about that coming up as well. But first, let's talk about Bedlam. All of a sudden, these next two games coming up between Oklahoma and Oklahoma State have huge implications as far as the Big 12 tournament goes. Oklahoma is now ranked that they're fourth in the standings in the Big 12 standings. But they're just a game up on Oklahoma State. I mean, how important are these two matchups for Oklahoma just generating some momentum as they head into the Big 12 tournament?
Man, what a difference a bad loss in Manhattan can make on the outlook of a season, right?
Yep.
I mean, unbelievable how much has changed in just a few days here. So Oklahoma went from earlier in the week being projected as a 2 seed in the NCAA tournament to now they're sitting as a 4 seed in their own conference tournament, and run the risk of falling to a 5 or a 6, depending on how a few things go over these next couple of games. So zero margin of error. And I mean, just a horrific loss in Manhattan. Talked about it earlier this week as far as what went wrong and how they can learn from it. But yeah, no time to feel sorry for themselves. They got to get right back on the horse. Bedlam comes up tomorrow in Norman. And I would like to say this is just a man, you know, they got Cade Cunningham and they just got to stop that guy. And that's true. But they've got an army of players, seemingly, that are averaging in double figures. And if you round that up, so they've got 5 guys outside of Cade Cunningham's 19 a game. They have 5 additional players who are averaging 9 points a game, between 9 and 10 points. So you essentially have 5 other guys besides possibly the number one pick in the draft next year in Cade Cunningham. You have 5 other guys that are basically averaging double figures. And then, oh, by the way, they have Bryce Williams, an Ole Miss transfer that's averaging over 7 a game. So they have a lot of weapons. They're going to be very hard to guard. I think it's huge for Oklahoma that they are getting this first game in Norman, because when you have a 2-game series, which is kind of like a 2-game mini series here, it's good to have that first matchup be at home where you do have a little bit more of a cushion. You'd like to think you're going to shoot the ball a little bit better at home. You're going to have that feeling out process so that you have a game under your belt against this team, hopefully a win under your belt when they go to Gallagher, Iowa for Big Monday.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see which team's secondary scoring is able to step up. And that was really the big issue against Kansas State. And nobody, aside from Austin Reeves, really put any balls in the basket. They just didn't get anything from anybody else. And Oklahoma's got to do a much better job. You know, Moja Gibson's got to do better. Elijah Harkless has got to do better. Brady Manick has got to step up. And they've got to hit shots. And that's been the big issue with this team, is if they're not hitting shots and they're not getting good shots and not hitting them, then they're going to struggle. And you know, defensively, it's still a pretty good team, but they're going to have to play really, really good team defense this week against Cade Cunningham and against that deep, deep Oklahoma State Cowboys team.
Yeah, they are. And, you know, you mentioned their secondary scorers needing to step up. And, you know, to me, like that really starts and stops for me with Brady Manick. I don't understand what's taken place there this year. There's been spurts where he seemed like he's come back. There's been a lot of spurts where he's disappeared. And if you look at the stat line in Manhattan, I mean, 14% from the field, 2 points and 1 rebound in 16 minutes. Well,
unreal.
I mean, you cannot, I don't care. And this is where people will say, well, man, you know, K-State's trash. They were 6-18. Yeah, you know what, though? They play in the Big 12 Conference. They have a coach in Bruce Weber who's a freaking good basketball coach who's gone to the Elite Eight and made deep runs in the tournament with different programs. They are a good team. And their record won't show that, but they have good players. They have a great coach. You can't go on the road in this conference and have a four-year starter go score 2 points and have one rebound. You cannot win that way. I don't care who you are. You take one of your second, third best players and you give them 2 points and a rebound, you're not beating anybody that's any good at all in this league. So that has to get fixed. And to me, it's the more than the stat line, but I want to see Brady Manek do better. I want to see better body language. I want to see more leadership. I want to see more intangibles that I would expect to see from a four-year starter. I want to see those things because at the end of the day, man, Austin Reeves is like wearing it on his sleeve. Like he is trying to will this team to wins at times. And it's frustrating to watch. It's not just like this, but it kind of reminds me of a situation where in the 2017 football season, you had Baker Mayfield just balling out, wins the Heisman, does all that stuff. And his defense is terrible, right? So he's out there having to be perfect. And, you know, Kyler Murray had to be perfect. Those guys are going to carry all this load without any help from the defense. Well, Austin Reeves has averaged over 22 a game on the road, and they can't continue to have to rely on him all the time. Like, you can't win games like that where you put so much pressure on one guy to be the man and you don't make plays around him. So Elijah Harkless is not an offensive spark plug. If he gives you offense, that's a bonus because he's out there to stop somebody on defense. He's going to be out there to make Cade Cunningham miserable tomorrow, and that's what they need him to do. They need him to stay out of foul trouble, and if he gives you points, great. But they need that guy on the floor to be up in Cade Cunningham's face, getting in his head, doing whatever he can do to be a menace defensively. But Brady Manek is not a defensive menace. Brady Manek is, in a lot of ways, a defensive liability. So if you're going to be that, if you're going to be the stretch four that we're trying to go small, play him inside, he's got to be more physical. He's got to carry himself with a little bit better disposition, body language-wise. And he's got to make shots because that's what he does. He's a shooter. He's not a back-to-the-basket guy, although they're asking him to be sometimes. But you've got to produce something offensively. And if you're not going to, then you at least need to carry yourself in a way that inspires your team and instills confidence, because that is the missing link right now for me. And that's the biggest question mark I have about this team in this two-game set in Bedlam, is it's going to get chippy. It's going to be emotional because it is a rivalry, and Oklahoma State has the best player in the conference. So Oklahoma's had a really good season, and they have a player that's playing out of his mind in Austin Reeves. But Cade Cunningham is the best player in America, possibly, but definitely the best player in this league. So they're going to come in here thinking like, yeah, Oklahoma, yeah, I know you guys are ranked in the top 10 or whatever, but guess what? You're 14-6, and we're 15-6. We're pretty good, too. And we've heard all about you guys down south and who all you've beaten, but you haven't beaten us, and you haven't played us, and you haven't stopped Cade. So they're coming in thinking like they're winning this game. Like I said, it's going to be Bedlam. They're going to have a chip on their shoulder. It's going to be emotional. And if you have four-year starters that come out there in a funk mentally or playing with a fog, then that's what's going to get them beat tomorrow. And then you can say, well, that's really unfair to put it all on Brady Manek. No, it's not. It's not unfair. Because when you're a four-year starter, expectations are different. Uh-huh. And this is not college football where there's 11 guys on the field and you just got to do your job. No, there's five guys on the court, and there's different levels of expectations. And you've been in big time games and you've played big time basketball in big time games. So what this team needs is they need more guys like him to step up and stop putting all of it on Austin Reeves. Stop asking Emoji Gibson to hit a bunch of threes, like just be reliable and be present and be engaged. And if he will do that, then I think they get this win tomorrow. But what I'm looking for from Brady Manek, I think this is going to be the indicator of whether he was engaged or not, is I need one or the other. I either need double-figure rebounds or I need double-figure scoring. I need one of those two, because double-figure rebounds just requires more effort and focus and intensity. The points can come as a byproduct of that. So to me, I want to see one or the other. I'd like to see both, but I think that's really a pivotal key to me, is like, what are they going to get from Brady Manek?
Yeah, and because they're having to play so small, because that's their best lineup, they need Brady Manek to be a little bit more intense and provide a bit of an edge on the interior, because, you know, when Emoji Gibson is your leading rebounder for a game, that's not great. And that's what happened against Kansas State. Like, you don't want to be relying on your guards to be your leading rebounders. Now it helps if you're getting good team rebounding, but yeah, they got to get a better effort out of Brady Manick, and they just got to get better efforts all the way around. Like you said, Austin Reeves can't carry it all by himself, even as great as Michael Jordan was. I mean, he relied on Steve Kerr to hit big shots in big moments. He relied on Byron Armstrong to hit big shots in big moments.
Well, here's again. So if you think I'm being too hard on Brady Manick, that's fine. Come at me on that, whatever. The last two games at Iowa State, worst team in the league. At K-State, second worst team in the league. Brady Manick's stat line, in 33 minutes of action, 6 points, 5 rebounds, 1 assist, and 2 personal fouls in 33 minutes. So what is that? Why don't you say personal fouls? What does that matter? Because it shows whether you're engaged or not. You have one foul on each game. You're probably, as a big man down low, you ain't playing physical enough.
Right.
You're probably going to find, you're going to accidentally foul somebody once or twice.
Yeah.
Like you need to be, I want to see some more contact. I want to see you have a foul or two, not a dumb foul, but you should be getting a foul or two because you're crashing the board so hard. You're going over somebody's back, or you're blocking out so hard that you get called for being too aggressive, or you're trying to prevent an easy layup. So you go put them on the line for 2 points. You just go hammer somebody when the backside help didn't do their job and you have to recover. You just make sure they don't get an and one. Like that's the kind of stuff to me. When I look at those last two games, and Oklahoma nearly blew a 21-point lead in Ames, they stumbled their way through the loss in Manhattan, and we got a 4-year starter with 6 points, 5 rebounds, and 1 assist in the last two games combined. That just isn't going to cut it. So sorry if I'm going too hard on, too real here on Brady Manick, but I think that I've seen him be better than this. I know he's capable of being better than this, and this team has to have him be better than this if they want to reach their potential in March.
And that's Real Talk with D-Walk. And coming up next, we're going to go through ESPN's list of top 60 quarterbacks and where Oklahoma ranked. What are some surprises that David and I saw on the list? And we'll do that next here on Locked On Sooners.
But first, let me tell you about Bet Online. BetOnline.ag is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football is over, but the NBA, college basketball, and the NHL are in full swing. Major League Baseball is coming up in just 35 days. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. They provide real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. They've got you covered for all the news, scores, and odds, and it's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Use the promo code LOCKEDON when you head over to their website, or you can use your mobile device to sign up today. And if you use our promo code LOCKEDON, you'll receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. So get off the sideline, get in the action, use the promo code LOCKEDON, get your 50% welcome bonus at betonline.ag, your online sportsbook experts.
And today on the Locked On Today podcast, is the relationship broken between Russell Wilson and the Seahawks? Get more of the sports news you need in less time with the Locked On Today podcast. Subscribe to Locked On Today wherever you get your podcasts. And now, David, we're going to talk a little bit about quarterback play from the last 21 years. And there's been some excellent quarterback play in college football. And ESPN came out with their list of top 60 quarterbacks in college football from the 2000s. And you have 6 Oklahoma Sooners make that list. Now, first of all, that seems to me that's a bit of a surprise. Now, as they've had a lot of great ones, but to me, the one that they left off, and we can go through this list. I guess let me just run it down real quick, and then we can talk about who might have been left off and who maybe shouldn't have been on there. But coming at number 36, you had Landry Jones. At number 30, Jason White, Heisman Trophy winner Jason White. Number 23, Jalen Hurts, Heisman Trophy finalist. Number 15, Sam Bradford, Heisman Trophy winner. Number 7, Kyler Murray, Heisman Trophy winner. And the best quarterback, according to ESPN's list of top 60 quarterbacks of the 2000s, at number 1, Baker Mayfield. Now, David, does that surprise you at all?
That they didn't have Trevor Knight or Blake Bell on there?
Is that what you're saying? I mean, I was speaking in, I think the one that surprised me would probably be Josh Heupel.
Yeah, I consider Josh Heupel, but I think in the context of he only really had the one season in the 2000s, he had 1 year in the actual year 2000. Mm-hmm. And yes, he was a Heisman runner up. So in theory, if you look at it and say, well, there have been 21 national champion quarterbacks since 2000. So if you get 21 national champion quarterbacks in your top 60, then yes, you could put him in there. So that does feel like a little bit of a snub. Maybe he would have been in that the bottom 10. But if you look at statistics of what those quarterbacks have done, the other six quarterbacks that are actually on the list at Oklahoma, their statistics blow what Heupel did out of the water. You know, statistically speaking, Heupel really dropped off as that year went on. He had the elbow issue. We talked about this on the pod a few weeks ago, but they won the last game of the season that year, 12-7.
Yeah.
In Stillwater. And then, you know, they win the Orange Bowl 13-2, and he doesn't throw a touchdown pass. So I don't think statistically his numbers probably warranted him, you know, finding himself into that number or being a lock. So it probably was a little subjective to leave him out. But I think the bigger storyline to me is, yes, Oklahoma has six in the top 60. And that's kind of the way their people would phrase it. Like, they've got 10%
in the top 40.
Yeah. Right. You say, and on a bigger picture, you say, well, they have 10% of the top 60 on that list. And then you drill it down and say, actually they have 17% of the top 36. That's the math for you on a Friday.
There you go.
Do any equations, but I can do some basic division.
Sooner Fact Friday.
Yeah, but like six out of the top 36 quarterbacks in the year since the year 2000 have been Oklahoma Sooners. So that in and of itself is pretty impressive.
Yeah, and I think the thing that the surprise here for me, and I don't know, maybe I just have it a little hard on Landry Jones, but to see him in the top 60, first of all, but then also just to see him ranked as high as he was, you know, like he's ahead of a guy like Patrick Mahomes, who, I mean, yes, Texas Tech didn't really do much, but Patrick Mahomes was like Herculean when he was at Tech. I mean, some of those games that they played, and you know, I think back to that, what was it, 66-56 game with Baker Mayfield back in 2016 or something. I think it was 2016.
Yeah.
It was just an incredible, incredible performance. And, you know, he's ahead of like Eli Manning and Eric Crouch and Brady Quinn. And I don't know, just a lot of these, Alex Smith, who was fantastic for Urban Meyer at Utah. So yeah, Landry Jones, great Oklahoma quarterback, but to me, his time at Oklahoma was a disappointment.
Yeah. And I can see both sides of that equation. So I think the bigger picture with Landry Jones is he was a 4-year guy. Like, how many guys in that list had four, like, I mean, he was kind of accidentally a 4-year guy. Sam Bradford's shoulder, you know, allowed that to take place, or his collarbone more specifically. But he was a 4-year guy, and he had a huge opportunity in the offense that he was running to put up just historic numbers that broke every record at Oklahoma when he left, you know. And then he has a lengthy NFL career, and you can say what you want about that. Although he was primarily a backup, but he was cashing checks, and he was starting some games there in Pittsburgh with a good organization, right? So – I think that's probably where you look at his career overall. It's more impressive to people that aren't Sooner fans, right? So the person that put this list together, they just see Landry Jones' impact, his statistics, the win-loss record is good enough to most people. But to a Sooner fan who had just seen Josh Heupel, Nate Hibble, Jason White, Sam Bradford kind of come through the pike right there, and then you get Landry Jones and you get 4 years of good stats and some in good wins, but not elite level national championship type stuff, Heisman stuff. It left people wanting more. And I think his disposition wasn't necessarily real inspiring either. Like he wasn't the kind of personality that people really gravitated to either. So I think the Sooner fans probably discount some of what he did on the field based upon who he followed and possibly some of how he carried himself. I don't think he carried himself bad. He didn't do anything to embarrass the university. He never did all the right things. I just think that, you know, in an era where, or a program that has guys like that are just dynamic personalities like the Boz and, you know, the Baker Mayfields, a guy like Landry Jones just kind of can come and go and be underappreciated even as a number 36 in the top 60.
Yeah, and, you know, maybe I'm too hard on Landry Jones. I just have some bad memories of some bad interceptions where he's falling away from pressure and trying to throw off his back, but that's just me.
Yeah, no, there were definitely some games. That, I mean, I was just talking to a guy the other day about how Ndamukong Suh was so great, and when Landry Jones threw 5 interceptions against Nebraska. I mean, part of that was Nebraska had a really good defense, and part of it was Landry wasn't very good that day, right? But, I mean, there were games like that, like to your point, though, where – Sooner fans would walk away like, you know, this guy, you know, so that's the nature of fandom. So I think that he, more so than the other quarterbacks that are on this list that are OU guys, he left fans having more of those feelings probably than the others. So yeah. I do understand where you're coming from on that. And I do think some of that's fair. But again, that is one of those things. It's an embarrassment of riches at Oklahoma that we have this conversation, because if you put Landry Jones on, I would say probably any program outside of maybe the top 10 to 15 programs in America, but his career, what he did, the length of time in the NFL, what he accomplished as a college football player, and you drop him into any program in the United States, they'll probably have the guy's jersey retired, like, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's how good he actually was. It's just, it's unfair to him, but it's also fair to him because you're the quarterback at Oklahoma. So the standard is there. It's either exceed it, surpass it, live up to it, fall short of it, however it goes. That's just the scenario you have. But I think that, you know, like I said, if he played quarterback at Kansas State, or if he played quarterback at Iowa State, or if he played quarterback at Indiana or Rutgers or wherever, I mean, you just drop him into Power Five, some obscure Power Five schools, he's going to be an icon at those places because of what he did. So, but I like to, you know, as a Sooner fan, to feel frustrated by his performances at times was totally fair as well.
And then let's talk about the four quarterbacks that come in right behind Sam Bradford. You got Jameis Winston. So Sam Bradford at 15, you got Jameis Winston at 16, Matt Leinart at 17, Andrew Luck at 18, and Tua at 19. Any surprises there?
I mean, not really. I guess I would say Jameis Winston could have been ahead of Sam Bradford because he had a national title to his name. Yeah. So that to me would be one. If you want to look at that, I would say Matt Leinart as well, but I don't know. I think Sam Bradford, obviously he was a number one overall pick, and he did that coming off a season where he barely even played.
Right.
He was still the number one overall pick. So, yeah, I followed Sam Bradford's career obviously closer than I did some of those other guys. So I think it's fair from the standpoint of what he accomplished over a longer period of time, possibly. But you know, I could have definitely seen some of those other guys being ahead of him as well. But I think 15 is probably about the ballpark I think Sam Bradford belongs in, 15 to 20, somewhere in that range.
So let's talk about the guys that come in just in front of Sam. So coming at number 10, you got RG3, Robert Griffin III. Number 11, Trevor Lawrence. Number 12, Colt McCoy. Now, to me, there's huge debate there. Number 13, Johnny Manziel. And number 14, Kellen Moore.
Oh, man. So we got Johnny Manziel, Kellen Moore.
Right in front of him. And then Colt McCoy, three spots ahead of him. Trevor Lawrence at 11 and Robert Griffin III at 10.
See, I don't see how Colt McCoy can be ahead of Sam Bradford as a college quarterback. Like,
same.
I don't understand that at all. Like, I mean, not only like did he not win a Heisman Trophy, but and you say, well, he made it to a national title game just like Bradford did. Okay. And he got hurt just like Bradford. Bradford got hurt at different points in their careers. I don't see that. I think that's a slight there. Now, Colt McCoy, though, has had a nice NFL career, probably, you know, could be arguably a better NFL career than Sam Bradford has had, or at least more longevity there. So I don't know. That's odd to me.
Yeah. Yeah. It's surprising to me as well. And I get the Kellen Moore love. I mean, he had 50 wins as a college quarterback, which is huge. Had some big time wins as well. So that doesn't bother me as well. Johnny Manziel, I think there's just a lot of hype. I feel like, you know, you just look at the stat lines and, I mean, Bradford's passing stats are easily better than Johnny Manziel's. But let's go down the top 10 real quick. You got RG3 at number 10, Marcus Mariota at number 9, Lamar Jackson at 8, and then you got Kyler Murray coming at number 7. And again, this is a guy that had, you know, he played for A&M, but really only played 1 year of college football.
Yeah, I think that's the most impressive thing on the whole list to me, is Kyler Murray at number 7 based on one season of football. Just one. I mean, really just one season, because I don't think that the A&M thing even enters anybody's mind whatsoever.
Right.
So what he was great enough in 1 year to be in the top 7 in the last 21 seasons of college football, you know, so that's pretty phenomenal.
Yeah. And the same can be said for Joe Burrow, who comes in at number 5. He, you know, played, he was at Ohio State, but didn't really play. Then he played like the last couple games at LSU, but I mean, nobody's really considering that, but it was his season in 2019 that he won the Heisman that launches him as number 5 and into the top 5 of this discussion.
Yeah, but he definitely did play a little bit at LSU before that last season, because he got absolutely obliterated by Central Florida on a play in the Peach Bowl, like destroyed. Like, I don't know how he ever even played another game after that hit he took on a, covering on an interception he threw. And if you didn't ever see that, then go find it on YouTube, because it was pretty glorious. And it won't ease the pain of the Peach Bowl loss that Oklahoma took the next year, but it'll still be worth watching. But yeah, I think Joe Burrow and Kyler Murray both, in their own ways, kind of blew out of the water the idea that you need more than just one great season. Mm-hmm. You know, I think Mac Jones just did the same thing at Alabama. Like, all you really need is 1 year to show that you can do everything you need to do. And then once you do that, you can be the number one overall pick. So yeah. I think it's pretty cool how those guys changed the whole game.
Yeah. And then here's the top four. And I don't know how anybody possibly ranked these top four. And to me, the surprising one is number four, and that's Tim Tebow. I thought when I first saw this list that Tim Tebow would be number one on this list.
Yeah. And I think I mean, if I want to take my Sooner glasses off for a minute, I'm putting Tim Tebow number one on this list. Like, just me personally.
Yeah.
If we're only talking about what they did as a college football player, I don't really see how there was that much of an argument, but some people don't like Tim Tebow, and that's fine. I know a lot of Sooner fans don't like Tim Tebow, and that's fine, but I respect Tim Tebow, and I'm going to say, it's just try to be objective here. I'll say, if you put him at number one, I would have had zero complaints with it.
Yeah, absolutely. To me, that was my expectation. Cause again, in three seasons or four seasons, he had 88 touchdown passes, 57 rushing touchdowns. Like, he had more rushing touchdowns in his time at Florida than Vince Young had passing touchdowns at Texas.
taking a shot at Vince right now?
Well, no, I mean, Vince didn't play as much, but I'm going to say, like, that's just how incredible Tim Tebow's career at Florida was. Now, he started off just kind of as a red zone guy behind Chris Leak. Incredible that they had those two guys playing quarterback at the same time. But yeah, and then he finished, you know, he's a Heisman Trophy winner in 2007, and then he was a finalist in 2008 and 2009. He could have won. Yep. He honestly could have won the Heisman 3 years in a row. I think people just decided to go other directions. And then you got Vince Young at number three. And I could see an argument for him at number one as well because of his career. And honestly, his Rose Bowl performance, which a lot of people argue is the greatest college football game ever between Texas and USC. I mean, I could see an argument being made for Vince Young as the number one quarterback of the 2000s.
Yeah.
Not as much as Tim Tebow, but I can see it.
Yeah, I would argue against Vince. I would honestly say Vince even being number three, I think that's kind. I think his early seasons at Texas left a lot to be desired. He got spanked by Oklahoma a couple times early on, where he was just more of a project that had not reached his potential yet. And so, and that's being overly critical. But when you're splitting hairs on who these top guys are, you know, you look at a guy like Tim Tebow, who has four amazing seasons, one of which he helps win a national title as the backup, but he played a huge part of that. Mm-hmm. And to be a three-time Heisman finalist and a Heisman winner, Vince Young didn't win a Heisman, you know? And so to have three seasons like Tebow did, to me, I would have put him certainly ahead of Vince Young. But you know, as I said, I asked if you're taking a shot at Vince. I was going to be high on you if you were, but that's okay.
Well, I mean, we can definitely take shots.
We can take shots that he got fired for being terrible, whatever he did at Texas, and then he just got hired again for something new. So, but that to me would be the biggest difference I see in a guy like him is just the fact that some of these guys had 3 to 4 incredible seasons. Mm-hmm. And I think Vince had one amazing season that we remember with the confetti in the Rose Bowl, and we, you know, see him doing the Eyes of Texas and all that stuff with the confetti falling, national title. And that's the lasting image of Vince Young that I think props him up for some of the shortcomings of his earlier days as a Longhorn.
Yeah. I mean, Tebow had 3,000 more passing yards and just 200 fewer rushing yards. But again, Tebow had, you know, 20 more rushing touchdowns and 44 more passing touchdowns. And he had less interceptions. Like, Vince Young played less and still had more interceptions than Tebow. And so, as you're talking, I'm like, yeah, there's zero argument, actually, that Vince Young should be ahead of Tim Tebow. Because Tebow did win a national championship as the starting quarterback in 2008. Like, what else can you expect? So, anyway, it's just surprising. So, then, number two, this is the godfather of the one-year wonder, I can win the Heisman, then be the number one overall pick, and that's Cam Newton.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't have any argument with Cam Newton because the guy went on to, you know, go to the Super Bowl, win an MVP, and backed up everything he did. I mean, if we're talking college football, obviously we're only talking BCS or FBS level, but he also won a national championship in JUCO as well. So if you want to say like the guy's won everywhere he's been and been amazing everywhere he's been, then yeah, Cam Newton deserving at number two. But if you're going to sit here and ask me if I'm going to be upset that our boy Baker is coming in at number one, I'm happy about it. I like it because I think Baker is the flag bearer of college football. I think Baker Mayfield, beyond any of these other guys, was the most must-see player in college football. And he was must-see for three seasons, essentially. You know, like the flag plant in Ohio State, all the swagger, the good, the bad, all of it together made him bigger than the game in a lot of ways. Like, he really transcended college football, and that's why he's on all these commercials right now. Mm-hmm. So to me, the three-year run at Oklahoma, shoot, you could even throw in the walk-on at Texas Tech and become a starter as a true freshman and throw that into the equation too. I mean, it all adds into the legend and the legacy and the persona. But yeah, for all those reasons, yes, the national title didn't happen, but when he did what he did with historically horrible defenses, I don't think you hold that against him.
Yeah, and there's nobody that brought out more opposing fan ire than Baker Mayfield did. I think, like, even the, what was it, at Kansas, and they had the kids on there for the coin toss and the honorary handshake and whatnot, and the kids, they snubbed him on the handshake at midfield.
Yeah, the captain snubbed him. I mean, and yeah, like, yeah, it's a difficult thing to get somebody at Kansas football to feel anything about anything. So the fact that they didn't like Baker makes him, you know, even more legendary probably.
Yeah.
And you say, well, man, he didn't conduct himself very well on the sideline. Okay, that's fair too. But it, you know, in the world of entertainment, because sports is also entertainment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in boxing, in professional wrestling, in UFC, the Conor McGregors of the world, The Rock, the Muhammad Ali's, the guys that could talk, the guys that could draw a crowd, the guys that could put butts in seats or put butts in front of a TV to watch them play. Those are the guys that you remember. And you, a lot of times you remember it for the things they did off the field and the things they said off the field and the way they carried themselves off the field. So Baker Mayfield is one of those guys. And because of that, he tops this list for those things, plus the on-the-field production that speaks for itself and will stand the test of time also.
Yeah, and he may not have had the success of this guy that I'm about to compare him to, but as far as like personalities, and I mean, because he was probably like, he was the heel of college football during that time. I mean, if you're an OU fan, you love the guy, but pretty much everybody else didn't like the guy.
Totally.
But he's Ric Flair. Like, he is Ric Flair.
Yep.
I mean, the swagger, the machismo, the, you know, all the ladies that were OU fans, I'm sure they were wanting some of that Baker Mayfield action. But
a lot of Sooner kids named Baker in the last year or two.
That's right. A lot of kids wearing their headband. I mean,
yep.
Yeah. I've seen pictures of your kids wearing their Boomer Sooner headbands.
My boys wear headbands exclusively because of Baker Mayfield. That is a fact. I can attest to that.
So yeah, he absolutely Ric Flair. But anyway, a lot of fun. I love lists. People love lists. It's old Chris Arnold, who was found out a couple weeks ago that he was a basketball walk-on when he was a freshman at OU. But he's a radio personality in Dallas-Fort Worth. But he always used to say, people love lists. So shout out to Chris Arnold. But also shout out to ESPN for putting this list together. And definitely go check it out. If you got disagreements with it, let us know how you feel about it. But coming up next, we're going to get into Sooner Madness. We got the second round. We're going to talk about some of our favorite matchups and go through it a little bit and talk about who we expect to come out on top and head to round three here on Locked On Sooners. And now in this segment of the Locked On Sooners podcast, make sure you go to our Twitter page. You can find Sooner Madness, our tournament, trying to find out who's the greatest Sooner of all time for the 2021 season. And you can vote on this. It's a 64-person tournament. We've already had round one. Round two is up, ready for you to vote. And we're going to start off with the Campus Corner region of this matchup. And in the 3-6 matchup, Dave, we got Wayne and Tisdale versus Teddy Lehman. Who are you liking here? Who should move on?
Well, this is one of those, you got obviously a generational talent in Wayman Tisdale, a guy that's got his jersey hanging at the Lloyd Noble Center, 3-time All-American. And then you got Teddy, the one, the butt kiss, won the Benaric, you know, hometown legend back in Fort Gibson, Oklahoma, USA, where I happen to be from as well. So as difficult as it is for me to go against my high school teammate, childhood friend, Teddy Lehman, I got to say Wayman Tisdale because – look, there have been other guys win the butt kiss, right? There's been Rocky. There's been the Boz. And that's not to take anything away from the things Teddy did on the football field. But Wayman Tisdale, basically put OU basketball on the map nationally, and would go on to be the number two pick overall in the draft, have like a 14-year NBA career. And, you know, I don't think you can really argue with what Wayman Tisdale did as a Sooner. And while some of our listeners and our Twitter followers might not be old enough to remember Wayman for what he did on the court, the legacy stands the test of time. So I'll take Wayman in round two advancing to the Sweet 16.
And then in the 2-7 matchup, you got the legend, Bud Wilkinson, coming up against Derek Strait, the last cornerback to win the Nagurski Award. Who you got in this one?
D. Strait, I think, was a good win over D.D. Westbrook. That was a cool matchup in round one. But this is where the road ends for Derek Strait. Bud Wilkinson, three national titles, the godfather. It's going to be hard to supplant Bud in going into the Sweet 16 here.
Yeah, sorry about you, Strait. We're heading straight home. But yeah, Bud Wilkinson's going to win that one. And then in the 4-12 matchup, hey, I'm proud of our listeners for voting Patty Gasso through. They did the right thing on that one, but she's got a tough matchup coming against Hollywood Brown in the 4-12. What do you think happens here?
I think Patty Gasso gets it done. I think Hollywood, yes, he was a great Sooner and one of the all-time Sooner names. And man, one day we might have to do just a top 10 list of the best Sooner names ever, because we got some good ones.
Yeah.
Patty Gasso is in her decade of running a dynasty now. Nine College World Series appearances, four national titles, well on her way to a 10th College World Series this year. She's got the 27 Yankees Bronx Bombers over there playing in Norman right now. So I think on the strength of what she's currently doing on the diamond, Patty Gasso will waltz into the Sweet 16, and Hollywood with a 12-5 upset, making it to round two. That's fantastic, but Patty Gasso will be in the Sweet 16.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I've casted my vote for Patty Gasso as well. She's a dynasty. Nothing else to say there. But then we got a really interesting matchup, which would have been a really interesting matchup in the ring in the 80s had these two, had the Boz gone this way. But we got the Boz versus Dr. Death.
Oh, man, this is my favorite matchup, probably the entire second round. And it's fitting that it's in the Campus Corner region. You know, not to draw too many parallels here, but some bad things go down on Campus Corner occasionally, right? A couple of fights, a couple of bar fights, you know, what's been called the brawl in the stall recently. So if you take, I know, that's pretty great. That's
awesome.
That's John Hoover. I saw it from John Hoover. I'm not going to take credit for it, but if you took the Boz, and let's just contextualize this a little bit. We got the Boz versus Dr. Death, Steve Williams, right? And Dr. Death, I think, one, talk about names, like just let's just skyrocket him all the way to the top of the list potentially. But you got the Boz versus Dr. Death, two icons in their own way, two tough guys, two like the baddest dudes that have ever been a Sooner in any sport. You put them in Campus Corner and put them in a bar fight, in a street fight, in a wherever you want to put them together. Let's just let our minds go wherever they go, whatever kind of encounter that they have. Vote that way. I'd like to just challenge the Sooner Nation. Don't just vote. Have some fun with this. All right. Allow your mind to wander. Don't just vote for the Boz because of the haircut and the Butkus Awards and all those things. Like, do a little homework on Dr. Death as well. Like, let's just not let this be a one-sided affair. Don't let this run away only on statistical things, because I know Steve Williams is an offensive lineman and he was a wrestler. So he's not going to be the sexy statistical guy. But if you look at those two guys side by side, you just ask yourself, who's advancing to the Sweet 16? If it's really between the Boz and Dr. Death, who am I really going to take? I'm curious.
Yeah, it should be a fun one. And I like to let my mind wander. I'm an imaginative guy, so that'd be a lot of fun. All right, so let's head to the Boyd Street region. And in the 3-11 matchup, got Stacey King pull the upset, and we'll be facing Blake Griffin, another little basketball matchup here. Who do you like in this one?
Man, you know, I actually like it's funny. So backing up a second, Stacey King beat Kelvin Sampson soundly in round one, which I was a little bit surprised by that. But Stacey King, another guy that's got his jersey hanging in the rafters. Look, people are going to think Blake Griffin because Kia commercials, dunk contest, recent history. But as our guy Jack Marsh on Facebook has just commented on the bracket, he said, Stacey King at OU was better than Blake. His best year was better also. He had 26 points, 10 rebounds, and 2 blocks and a steal. And Blake only outdid him in rebounds with 14 a game. So he's basically saying Stacey's best year versus Blake's best year. He took Stacey King. Stacey King also won NBA titles with Michael Jordan and the Bulls. They both had their jersey hanging in the rafters. So I don't know, man. This is a tough one. And Stacey King, maybe he was seated too low at number 11, but I think this is going to be an interesting matchup between Blake and Stacey.
Yeah, for sure. It'll be fun to watch how the voters play this one out. It seems like a lot of Oklahoma Sooner fans have really strong memories of Stacey King. So he could be in for upset.
I'll take Blake. For my part, I'm going to say Blake, but I did want to shout out to our guy, Jack Marsh, for making a strong argument for Stacey King.
Yeah, for sure. And then we got a 2-7 matchup between Sam Bradford and Rocky Kalmus.
Sam Bradford. I think Sam will take this one. Rocky will get some votes because he's a legacy guy and an all-time guy, but Sam Bradford will win this one.
Yeah, quarterbacks are the most important position on the field. Don't let anybody fool you. And he won a Heisman Trophy, so I think it's going to be Sam. And then we got a nice little pass catcher matchup between Keith Jackson at the 4 and Ryan Broyles at the 12. And Mr. Broyles commented on Facebook, he's like, oh, another tough matchup for me.
Yeah, he said it keeps getting tougher. So, yeah. You know, Ryan Broyles, big win in the first round, took out Jack Mildren, I believe, at the 5 seed. And now it gets a little tougher. He's got Jackson. So he's got a 4 seed matchup to try to overcome. And I do think, though, I think Ryan Broyles could pass him up because Ryan Broyles walked away with all the records. A little bit more recent success. Keith Jackson over there in Fayetteville calling the Hogs on the radio broadcast now. Do Sooner fans hold that against him? I don't, but some might. But Keith Jackson, like we said last week in the first round matchups, kind of offensively epitomizes the Barry Switzer 80s the way that Boz does defensively. So also won a Super Bowl with the Packers. Oh, man. You know, shout out to Ryan for showing it some love on Twitter, but I think Keith Jackson still will, I think he'll advance in this one.
Okay. And then the final matchup in this region, we got AD Adrian Peterson versus Tommy Harris.
Ooh, man, that would be an interesting matchup if there was actually like an inside drill where AD's mm-hmm. you know, getting a handoff in the inside drill. If you don't know what that is, that's just offensive line linebackers in a tight space, no DBs, no receivers, just banging heads on run plays. I would like to see that matchup, but I'm taking Adrian Peterson in this one.
All right. And then heading over to the Lindsey Street region, we've got in the 3-6 matchup, we got Leroy Selman versus Mark Clayton.
Friend of the show, Mark Clayton, MC, I'd love to give you the win here, brother. You know, if you missed MC on the Players Lounge, the last 3 episodes of the Players Lounge, MC was with us, including the episode yesterday that dropped. So go check those out. Shout out to Mark, but Leroy Selman, a generational guy, 50 years later, we'll still be talking about along with his 2 brothers. So I think Leroy Selman is not just Leroy Selman. Leroy Selman in this bracket kind of represents the entire faction, if you will, of the Selman brothers. So I know we talked pro wrestling on here, but Ric Flair and the 4 Horsemen, you got Leroy and the Selman brothers. That's kind of like just one unit. So Leroy and the Selmans will carry into the Sweet 16.
And then we got a 2-10 after Buddy knocked off the 7 seed. We got Billy Tubbs versus Buddy Hield.
Yeah, Buddy Hield took out Gerald McCoy, the 7th seed in the first round, which was a little surprising because Gerald is a very active, engaged former Sooner that, you know, I know a lot of Sooner fans feel fondly for, but Buddy Hield is Buddy Buckets, and Buddy is still doing his thing in the NBA. And I actually think that, you know, if Billy Tubbs passed away before the season started, so I think there's some sentiment here, but I think had that not been the case, I think Buddy might take this one. I'm going to go Billy Tubbs based on the sentimental vote. I think Billy will move on to the Sweet 16, but it would not shock me to see Buddy Buckets roll into the Sweet 16 as a 10 seed.
And then we got a 4-12 after Lauren Chamberlain pulled the upset again. We had a lot of good upsets in this the first round. We got Lauren Chamberlain as the 12 seed taking on Roy Williams, the 4.
Yeah, Lauren Chamberlain took out Heisman Trophy winner Jason White in a close first-round matchup. I've had certain people on Twitter and Facebook saying we seeded Lauren Chamberlain too low. I don't know if that's the case. That's for other people to decide, but I think the fact that she beat a Heisman Trophy winner in round 1 is pretty impressive, and now she's matched up with Superman. So can she keep the momentum rolling? Can the strength of the softball program and the interest that they're generating right now carry into this voting? I think it's possible. But I also think that Roy Williams in the Cotton Bowl, Superman play is when people see Roy Williams, they're going to think Superman and they're just going to click that vote button regardless of who's on the other side. So
yep.
I think the road, the Cinderella road runs to an end right here for Lauren. But hey, if Lauren goes to Sweet 16, that'd be a lot of fun too. So we'll see what happens, but I'll take Superman in round two.
Yeah, and then we got in the 1-9 matchup because DeMarco pulled off the win in the 8-9 matchup. So DeMarco Murray, the number 9 seed, taking on Barry Switzer, the 1 seed.
Oh, man, I think the King is safe for the second round. I think the King moves on to the Sweet 16. DeMarco, you know, doesn't have the cachet to take out Barry Switzer in the second round. So I think Barry moves on.
Yeah. Okay, then heading over to the final region, the South Oval region. In the 3-6 matchup, we got Kyler Murray going up against Billy Vessels.
Oh, man, the South Oval region. Whoever seeded this thing just really was unkind to the South Oval participants here. And whoever seeded this thing, that's tongue-in-cheek because it was your boy here. But we got 5 Heisman Trophy winners left among 8 participants in the South Oval. Now, this matchup between Kyler and Billy Vessels is a matchup between OU's first Heisman winner and their last Heisman winner. And it's the first of 2 Heisman versus Heisman matchups in this bracket, in this region, in this round. But Kyler Murray, Billy Vessels, Billy, strength of schedule, we're going to take it from you here. 40 time, we're going to take it from you here and go with Kyler.
Okay, and then in the 2-10 matchup, Joe Washington pulled off the upset here. We got Bob Stoops, the 2 seed, coming up against the 10 seed, Joe Washington.
Well, Joe Washington and Bob Stoops. Now that, to me, is an intriguing matchup for one reason. It's intriguing because you got Bob, right, who's the icon and the legendary coach. You got Joe, who has the silver shoes, who, according to legend, as I have heard Bob say before, that Bob wore silver shoes or tried to have silver cleats because of Joe Washington. And that makes this matchup intriguing in a lot of ways. So this is a kind of a cool thing that they got to be pitted against each other here in the second round. And I don't think that the silver shoes will carry the legacy of Bob Stoops. So I think Bob goes on to the Sweet 16 here.
And then we have another really, really intriguing matchup here. We got Billy Sims, the 4 seed, coming up against Steve Owens, the 5 seed.
Yeah, this is one of the most fascinating matchups in the whole second round to me, because you've got the second and third Heisman winners at Oklahoma in Steve Owens and Billy Sims. And Billy Sims, you know, Steve Owens was the athletic director, had a different kind of legacy at Oklahoma from that administrative side as well. And you got Billy, who's still active, got the barbecue joints all over the state. And also, you know, maybe a little bit notorious for his excessive boomers during Heisman acceptance speeches. I still cringe a little bit when I hear Jason White and Sam Bradford have to say sooner, like 7 times to Billy to kind of calm him down there. It's cringeworthy. So I do think that some people will actually vote against Billy because of that behavior. I think some people think that's just like too annoying. But I don't know. I think Billy, I'm going to take Billy in this one. Again, I think he played more recently than Steve Owens, and you know, obviously has a little bit more current relevancy to that. But I'll take Billy in this one. It'll be very interesting to see how this pans out.
Yeah, it'll be a close matchup for sure. And then we have another quarterback matchup between Baker Mayfield, the 1 seed, and Jamel Holloway, the 9 seed.
Yeah, Baker and Jamel, 2 guys that epitomize their era. I mean, Jamel Holloway is the quarterback of the 80s that everybody keeps talking about, won the national title, sent Troy Aikman to Los Angeles. And I don't think that Jamel, despite his mythical status, that, you know, just kind of like the enigma that people heard about but don't really know enough about if you're our age, I think Baker will blow this one away.
Yeah, ESPN's number 1 quarterback of the 2000s, Baker Mayfield, I think should have a runaway victory there. Hey, but that's going to do it for the second round of the Sooner Madness tournament. Make sure you are subscribed to the Locked On Sooners podcast. We'll continue to cover this tournament as it unfolds. Make sure you go and follow us on Facebook, Locked On Sooners podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at Locked On Sooners. And that's where the brackets are. We post them each round, so you can vote each day. Make sure you do that. And have a say. And who is the greatest Sooner of all time? Who should win Sooner Madness 2021? That's going to do it for today's show. Make sure you follow us on Twitter, David Walker at D_walk74. I'm John Williams at John9Williams. And for David, I'm John. We'll catch you on Monday. Boomer.
Sooner.